There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured. Not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
Hey, I'm Tyler.
And I'm Casey.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast. What's going on, all you woods people? This is the Element Podcast, brought to you by First Light Gear. And man, I have been putting the gear to the test. The other day, went out and shot some pigs in the new Terra pattern, which is actually not a pattern at all. It is the new brown color by First Light. Nothing that's groundbreaking, but it's a pretty cool color, and it's something that keeps you pretty warm.
Groundbreaking.
There's a new piece in that, right? It's the furnace hoodie.
I can't keep up with them all, but
yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we need to introduce a couple folks. If y'all don't know, we have got Michael Stoll.
Turkey Tom, Mike. Oh,
Turkey Tom.
Turkey Tom.
Turkey Tom.
I like that.
He's no longer a Jake.
Timothy Michael Stoll,
full-fledged Tom,
grown up,
and Eric Gentry, which y'all probably know, cameraman extraordinaire,
cinnamon roll,
hop, as we call him,
butter roll,
cinnamon butter roll, cinnamon bun, and
Cinnabon. They smell good.
Acapatio. Mm,
he does usually smell.
He
good.
He smells good for sure.
And, like, there's nothing I enjoy more than sharing a tree with Eric and getting a waft. Of his
beautiful smell,
his fabric softener or whatever it is he usually uses. I don't know.
It's probably my deodorant.
It might be your deodorant.
That's why
you also you lotion. I think at night as well. Don't you do like a face lotion or something like
oh,
that?
Oh wait, well
yeah, no. I've seen. You
sometimes
do that.
I do a beard softener.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I knew it. Michael, what's your favorite beard softener?
Oh well, I can't grow a beard, so
me neither, man.
What about a number 5 3-inch Magnum TSS? Would that soften a beard pretty good?
Yeah. I think it would do the trick.
Plan on doing some of that.
Disintegrate a beard.
For sure.
Baby. Okay, so plans, the reason we bring that up is, as y'all can tell, the Element crew likes to have fun.
Oh.
okay? We are fun-loving people.
Yeah, if you don't like fun, go away
right
now.
You're not going to like us.
Nope.
And we can tell that. But if you like to have fun, you're in the right place,
mm-hmm.
right? We like to hunt. We like to shoot stuff. We like to eat the stuff. And we have figured out that one of the ways to be effective at accomplishing all of those things is planning it out. And I will admit, in life, I'm not a very good planner, okay? I am not organized. I don't make a lot of plans for the future. I had like a little bit of a retirement, and then I had to take that out so that we could pay bills, you know? Like, just not a good planner, right? And thankfully, I have a financial planning buddy named Chris Webb, who you all know, who is helping me with some of that stuff now. But if you want to have a successful hunt, planning it out is important, man. And there's a lot of tools that we use to do that. And we'll get into that stuff here in a little bit. Some of the like little secrets we might have for planning hunts, or thoughts or ideas or tricks to make sure you get to go on a dream hunt almost every year. But I think overall, we might should talk about like why it's important to talk about this right now, Tyler.
You know what?
What?
I'm fixing to run a poll on Instagram.
Okay.
I'm gonna see what most people's dream hunt is.
Okay.
I'm gonna ask that question.
So we should do this when this podcast goes live, this poll will still be active. Just so you people know, we don't plan things at the Element except for hunts. So when we're doing podcasts, it is Tuesday, 2:49 PM Central Time, and this will air in just a little over 12 hours. At 3 a.m. on Wednesday Central Time. So you will have all of the work day on Wednesday to vote in Tyler's poll. What is your poll, Tyler?
I'm creating one right now. I just got to find something people might consider a dream animal and say, what is your dream hunt? I got to find a picture to go with it. But basically just trying to figure out, because like you said, you know, help you go on your dream hunt every year.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if I have to guess, at least with our audience, at least the ones that came pre-Meat Eater, a lot of those guys' dream hunt is an elk,
mm-hmm.
I feel like.
Yeah.
But the post-Meat Eater people, the people that you know, came from that, maybe more like a moose or a sheep or, you know,
yeah,
brown bear or something like that.
I feel
that.
Like there's levels of dream hunt, too. Like,
yeah.
I mean, this year, I'm probably going to get to hunt Iowa, which is kind of a dream hunt, and you can do that every few years as well.
Yeah.
You know, but it's still a dream. It's
mm-hmm.
a thing you dream about. So dream hunt doesn't mean once in a lifetime. It just means something you dream about, mm-hmm. right? Like, for instance, our buddy Garrett came down and hunted hogs with us last week. That was kind of a dream hunt for him.
Yeah, we made his dreams come true.
That's
for
right,
sure.
Dude. Every day, bro.
I know.
But
he says we're a dream to work with.
That's right. The dream team, actually.
Mm.
You know, dream hunt, it's pretty broad reaching. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've talked about this to a great extent on the podcast, but I don't know if we've polled you two. Michael, what is your dream hunt at the moment? Like the thing that
at the moment?
Yeah, not like your once in a lifetime. But, like, the thing that you are really thinking a lot about and want to do, not, like, a thing you're guaranteed to do.
At the moment, Osceola turkey.
Well, you're guaranteed to do that, aren't you?
Yeah, but
yeah.
That's,
well, not guaranteed.
That's the dream.
Probably going to.
Lord,
that's
Willen.
The dream. You're that fired up about it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if I said, Michael, in a 12-month span from here on, the thing you're most excited about.
Yes, but it's also very seasonal. Come, like, September, I'm going to be thinking a lot about elk. Come November, it's going to be like Iowa whitetail. So I'm pretty fair weather with it.
What's your dream of dreams hunt?
Yeah.
Of dreams.
What's your lifetime hunt?
Probably high country mule deer.
Really?
That's probably
really?
The one.
He's been running the last 4 days. He's already getting ready for
Have
it.
Have you?
Really?
Man.
Getting ready for the mountain
trying
birds.
Trying to be under 140?
You've been watching
mountain
my
birds.
Video over and over again?
Yeah, it was getting me fired up out there.
Sorry, dude. I should have taken you, man.
No, you should not have.
You didn't want to go on that one?
I was, you know, still learning how to run a camera.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't have been very smart.
Ole Gentry did a pretty good job.
He did.
Hopping around.
Eric?
I think for just right now, a dream hunt for me is a pronghorn.
Yeah?
I think I really want to go do that.
Yeah, you've talked about that quite a bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think that might have been your answer last time, or Mule Deer was your answer last time. I don't remember. We've talked about this, I believe, on podcast. Yeah, it does change. But you've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, I have. So hopefully that happens this year. Once in a lifetime, though, I think a moose.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a pretty common answer for
pretty
people.
Pretty big target.
It's also, like, somewhat attainable, too, mm-hmm. as far as, because, like, you look at the sheep stuff, like, there's a chance you just don't get to do that in your lifetime. Mm-hmm. Which
That'd
moose,
be really cool, but, yeah, like you said.
It's moose is like, you pay the money, you can go do it, mm-hmm. you know, which sheep, I guess, is, but it's just a lot more money. Mm-hmm. So.
Steve, if you're listening.
Steven Stahl, you're saying?
No. he does not have the money for that.
Come on, Steven.
I think blacktail would be pretty cool, too, though.
That would be cool. You know one of the things that keeps me from doing that?
The rut's in November.
Is it? I don't really know.
Well, in Washington State, I believe that's the way it is.
Assuming you mean like Columbia blacktail, not the Do you mean Alaska or do you mean?
Isn't there blacktail in Oregon?
Yes, there's the Columbia blacktail.
Yeah, Columbia. Okay, yeah.
the one of the things that keeps me from really dreaming about that too much is I don't know if I could go and kill one. You know, like apparently pretty hard to kill. That's what people say, at least. Hmm.
Depends on who you watching. Depends on who you watching, man. If you watch certain people, they'll tell you it's hard.
Yeah, well, you know, the harder you say things are on video, the better you look whenever you do kill something.
Exactly,
you know what I mean? That's why we just laugh a lot instead of talking about how cool we are. So here I go. Right?
Here we go.
But
digress.
So, yeah, Osceola turkey, pronghorn antelope. Tyler, right now, I feel like you kind of did this last year.
Yeah, this is like this is the obtainable one, or this is like the dream of dreams.
No, it's obtainable.
I mean, an elk.
Yeah.
An elk. Mm-hmm. For sure.
High country mule deer was your thing last year, though, right?
I'm a joke. I'm too old to have not killed an elk,
No,
dude.
You're not, dude.
I am.
No, you're not.
Anyway, that's probably it.
Yeah.
Yep. My dream of dreams, though, I don't know. I've been thinking about this lately. Because the moose is cool. I like the fact the moose is the biggest deer, right? The sheep is cool because the sheep are just awesome. Mm-hmm. Both those hunts, I feel like you can go hang out in a tent for 3 days, socked in, / not see anything for several days before something all of a sudden just happens or falls in your lap or whatever. And that is not my style of hunt.
Yeah.
I want to be chasing stuff, feel like I'm in the game every day.
Yeah. That's why I like mule deer and elk are fun because there's a good chance you're going to be in them.
I think a big mule deer would be cool, but I honestly think that this gets a little more specific, but like if I could hunt on a big private property in Iowa and chase like world-class deer, you know, free range, obviously, but like I'm just saying like I feel like when I'm chasing deer, I'm not to sound corny here, but in my element, this is where like I can do things that I feel capable of doing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like every day I feel like I would potentially have a chance. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Especially if I had acreage to deal with.
So if anybody,
and nobody
has a
else messing.
If anybody has a property.
I need like 2,000
You
acres.
Are the – Michael's the honorary reach out guy.
He's been waiting on this.
Yep.
He's like, man, I'm going to ask for some handouts here.
And,
man,
and while we're at it, Osceola's please. For Michael. If you got a place Osceola's on it, he needs
we
to
need,
go.
We need 100%. An Osceola place for him.
Yeah. So is your dream still sheep?
That's the dream of dreams. Mm-hmm. I would like to shoot – here's the breakdown here. I would like to shoot probably – I would probably like to shoot a Rocky Mountain bighorn in the state of Montana, and it will never happen.
Yeah.
Because
there's
I'm,
only
I'm
way
not
to do
draw
that
a tag.
Is lottery, right? You can't pay
or
to play.
Or if you had like 400,000, you could buy a governor's tag or whatever, I think.
Yeah, governor's tag. Yeah, that's probably it, though.
Since I've never even made that much in my professional career.
Everybody kind of knows about it, but there's the unlimited units. But I don't think you're going to go kill a very big ram there, are you?
I think they're okay. They can be
Are
okay.
They?
I do. But they're, I mean, it's just, it's so hard, dude. And like, here I am getting old, you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
I don't really have the drive to go out and prove myself like I used to have probably. Mm-hmm. So I just want to hunt because it's fun. I don't want to hunt because I need to prove to anybody that I can hunt necessarily. Like, mm-hmm. you know, there's a, I don't know. It's just like, so I, that's the same reason that I don't want to go sit in a tent that while it's raining for 3 days in Alaska, you know, it's because mm-hmm. I want to be hunting. It's fun to chase things.
Yeah. You know, I don't know, like my like achievable is probably hunting in Iowa because I'm probably going to do that this year.
Let's go.
I'm excited about that opportunity. And then like, I can't really say elk for achievable. I don't, I guess I could, but like I've killed a few, none of them are big. So I think that like my lifetime, like hunt is to hunt a big, big elk. Like that's the thing. Cause I thought a lot about this lately because like I used to think moose was it. And now like I watch moose hunts and stuff and it's just, I don't know if that's really the thing I want to do as my once in a lifetime. I don't know if I want to burn that on that. You know what I'm saying? Because
I do know what you're saying, actually.
Like,
yep.
The moose thing is almost like the accomplishment of having the animal.
Yeah.
And the means to get there isn't that great.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, elk, I like every single bit of the thing. I like it all.
Mm-hmm. It's a good point. It's a good point.
I think that's my
thing. The moose thing is, I think it can be cool. You know, but like a lot of times I think what I understand is it like you just sit there and look at a couple of moose every day from a mile and a half, 2 miles away or whatever. And then eventually there's one close enough that you feel like you don't have to pack him a mile and a half. And that's the one you get a chance at. And you go to calling and he walks in real slow. Whereas like a bull elk might run into you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I get it, man, for yeah. sure. So.
Yeah, which, I mean, I guess you can have a bull moose run into you, too, but it looks like that might not be much fun.
Yeah.
Because they try to kill you.
There's, like, one lane through the alders, and you're standing in it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. man.
Let me ask you this, Tyler.
All right.
Are you satisfied with your mule deer, or do you want to shoot a bigger one?
I definitely want to shoot a bigger one.
Yeah.
Especially, well, I won't say that. I definitely want to shoot a bigger one. Here in... At some point in the next couple of weeks, probably, you'll see some pictures of my mule deer mounted. And we were talking about him earlier. When I come into my room, he looks awesome. Mm-hmm. From the front, he is big. He's not a high score because his forks aren't deep. He doesn't have a good, I think it's called a G4. it's like confusing. A crab claw, you know, or whatever. And then the other one's just not that great either. Frame are overall is big, like his G2s are pretty tall too, but they're just not deep forked. So he's not like crazy big, but he's velvet and he's got a big frame. He looks good, and I thought it was awesome to shoot and a big accomplishment. But I did go on that hunt wanting to shoot like a 180, and I mean, that's achievable if you do it enough in a few different places.
Yeah,
that's
kind of my question is, do you feel like just spending time in the high country as much as you can gives you a good chance at doing that?
Yeah, in certain places. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to be in a few specific places, but there are places you can go where you don't have to probably spend the points that I did. Uh-huh. Or, I mean, money gets you there too. Like if you want to spend $7,000 mm-hmm. to go hunt plains deer, I mean, it can get you into some big bucks.
Yeah, I saw some big bucks on the plains before. There's some toads out there. So this kind of brings in the whole planning thing that we were talking about, because experience is going to really lead you into success when it comes to these types of hunts. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Tyler, you and I have been planning stuff for quite a while.
I think that's all we do.
That's about all we do, literally. It's kind of crazy how much of our everyday today is dedicated to playing. Now, given I'm not trying to big league anybody, right? But I'm just going to tell you, we get to hunt more than the average guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thankful for that. I really am. So don't, please, for one thing, don't listen to us talk about this stuff and be jealous of what we do or anything. It's a blessing. We're thankful for your support in liking what we do, and let's just all have fun together.
There's also sacrifice that comes with it.
I
was thinking about this because I follow some guys from the music industry that I've followed forever, right? And they tour in bands still, mm-hmm. and have been for over a decade, a lot of them. And so, like, the way that you see those guys' lives on Instagram is – like pretty glorious. Like it looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
There's lights, they're on stage, everybody's looking at them, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's like 90 minutes of a day for a few days a week. And then the rest of the time they're wishing they were at home with their kids and wife or girlfriend or whatever, you know, or their friends. And they're doing those things on the weekends while their buddies are off work. They never get to see their buddies and, you know, hang out and grill out or do whatever. So like there's always sacrifices in everything you do. And in this case, in our case, you know, it's not as glorious. It's not just hunting for a living. There's other things that we deal with on day to day that are not fun,
mm-hmm.
just like you do at your job or whatever. So, I just wanted to say that, we are blessed for sure. But
like right now we're planning a turkey hunting trip and we're looking at like, might be gone from home for like 10 days and like, that kind of hurts, man.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I know it. It's cool when you do it a couple times a year. When you do it a bunch, you start missing your family a lot.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right. But all that to say though is that I'm not very many years removed from like hunting what I think is an achievable amount for anybody,
mm-hmm.
and still having a job that is, you know, in the real world doing construction and like still finding a way to hunt quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
right? So doing that, though, takes some planning and some consideration and maybe just some lifestyle changes. So that's what we're going to kind of talk about a little bit here. I don't know. How do you want to start? You want to talk about, like, this ins and outs of, like, going to you know, game and fish websites kind of stuff? Or do you want to talk about, like, the financial lifestyle stuff? I feel like that's what I'm more...
Yeah, I kind of feel like that, too, man. I mean, the lifestyle stuff is really, like... That's the beginning of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you don't have that in order, then you can't really be going to the game and fish departments and trying to figure out how to do it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, here's the thing on that, then. If
like
you
this.
Aren't married, or you are married, either one, and you want to hunt significantly an amount more than what you do now, it's going to be tough to make that change. So, say, for instance, you are married, and you have gone to the deer lease a couple weekends of the year, and that's what your spouse is used to you doing. If you decide you're going to take some bigger trips and spend more money and more time away, it's going to have a significant toll on your significant other for you to change that up. And you need to be prepared for that, and you need to talk to them about that and show them why you're passionate about that and, you know, potentially carry them with you or whatever, right? But whenever you start changing kind of the way you do stuff, it's going to have an effect on your relationships. Right, dang, Tyler's looking up Dave Ramsey right now. Dude, oh my gosh! Yeah, look, he's got a Glenn Beck tab open as well. I see Ben Shapiro up there.
Sure thing.
But
I thought you would find that funny.
Yeah, is that the only reason you did it?
That's exactly why I did it.
Now, at the same token, if you are not married and you are interested in getting married, you
pick
should
right
probably
girl.
Yeah, that's where we're getting at, Michael. You need to listen instead of talk right now.
Okay? I'm just saying. The only thing I've heard him say is hey, if you have a property.
Yeah, he's trying to find that girl. He's an hour right now just looking up all the Amish girls.
Please.
So
I don't think they're listening.
If you are dating someone or you are not, either way, you need to understand that you should probably be trying to live your life now the way you intend to live your life for a while. And that goes beyond the way you hunt,
mm-hmm.
right? Don't think now that you can be a partier and then all of a sudden meet the right girl and that's going to go away. Because that is not how it works.
Because guess where you met that girl?
That's right.
At a party.
At a party. That's right. And some people can make that work. I wouldn't suggest trying it. But hey, here I go again getting in trouble. But
don't be saying anything at all.
That's right. Either way, live
In it.
Dang.
Let's go.
Live the way you should be living, and then you're going to potentially meet and marry someone who's going to understand the way you live. So I didn't actually do that as much. I worked a job where I got to like spend a lot of time outdoors whenever me and my wife started dating. So she didn't quite understand how I wanted to spend my downtime too much, and then it's been, I wouldn't say difficult, but it has been a thing that has had to be addressed a few times.
Phil Robertson talks about training a woman a lot.
Yeah, does he?
I think because he got married at like 16.
Yeah.
And so he's like, what you're saying is what he talks about a lot, where he's like, you know, you just got to teach a woman to pick a duck and cook the duck and everything else is good, you know? And I guess like he's kind of making a joke or whatever mm-hmm. about all that, but he's just saying like, you know, set your lifestyle up and give your spouse a chance to understand what you hope your life will be. And if she doesn't like that, then maybe she isn't the one, like Eric said, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Yep. And there also is always a little compromise when it comes to stuff like that, too. You know, like it's a pretty selfish thing to just want to be a man of the road all fall. And it probably isn't a good thing to subject your spouse to.
Yeah.
You know, and I've probably been guilty of that at some point too. However, like there's gonna be a balance there of like how he didn't even flinch, Tyler. So, of how you.
That's just normal speed to me now.
That's right. Of how you approach that stuff. Right?
I think that there's this thing too where there are so many possibilities now mm-hmm. in the workforce. With things that you can do with your occupations, different options. COVID has actually probably benefited, and hope that this podcast doesn't get flagged for false information.
Yeah, I just thought that, dude. You just said it.
I shouldn't have said it, probably. But it has, like, opened the door for people, like, executives at companies to understand, like, that people can get things done with more space than mm-hmm. they've ever had from their company. And so, you know, I think that when you look at, like, if you want to go on the road a lot in the fall or in the spring, if you're a turkey hunter or a fisherman or whatever, I think, like, maybe talking with your spouse about, hey, what are some jobs that we could both work that are super flexible and we can do via a computer? And this is kind of where the element started for me. It was like I started seeing this opportunity as like, hey, if I have internet service, I can kind of do what I need to do, you know, as far as just producing digital media in the outdoors. And so I can do this from a lot of different places. And of course I had to suffer for several years to kind of get to a point that was more comfortable, but that, and that may be the thing, and your spouse may not want to do that, but there's still opportunities. Like, you know, my sister-in-law was working remotely from 4 hours away from where her company, like she moved like 4 hours away from her company, and they still valued her because she's a hard worker. She's smart. She tries hard. And they said, hey, sounds good. Mm-hmm. I mean, as long as, you know, maybe you can come down every month or two and just check in, just go up there and live with your family and, you know, do your thing. You can do it remotely. And there, like, there's a lot of opportunity to do that now. So if you can do that, I guess what I'm getting to is, and your spouse can set that up too, mm-hmm. then you can travel together, and it makes things way easier when you're hunting, but you're coming back to like a pop-up camper or whatever you're, you know, mm-hmm. wherever you're at, and you're coming home to your spouse every night. It makes things a lot more
appetizing. There's people living, appetizing. Like working in a digital world who like are doing the van life thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like I see it on social a lot, and it's again, it's a snapshot of what their actual life is. I'm sure mm-hmm. there's some terrible stuff too, but like, yeah. you know, like there is some fun to it. And honestly, like, if you both set yourself up for that, there'll be more time for you to do what you care to do, but there's also more time for you too to do stuff together.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
you hunt 3 days and take a day. It's probably could be good for your hunting as well. Mm-hmm. You know, just like distance and go and give yourself a chance for a cold front to come in or something, you know, but like it really like that's something that you could set up and you may take a pay cut. But you may not, but, you know, I guess you guys probably haven't read The 4-Hour Workweek, but it's like it's a small book that like a lot of real estate people, investors like to read and talk about. And it's about setting up your life, and it shows you like a way to set up your life so that your work week is only 4 hours total. And so like, it's like outsourcing all these email jobs and stuff like that. And basically just checking in for like 4 hours a week is all you have to do to make sure your company still runs and everything else is run like overseas or whatever. There's like all these different things you can do. And I think that's kind of, you know, that's the idea is that like, can you set something up so that it kind of runs remotely? If you can't, there's also this idea in that book that says basically start accustoming your boss to taking more time off. And so you start like I've read it. It's been several years, but there's like a way that you like make your boss more comfortable with you taking time off by starting in a certain way. And he kind of goes through this process until eventually you're just like, hey, I think I'm just going to work from home. How do you feel about that? And if you're like an asset to the company, then he, you know, likely, especially after the sickness of 2020 that we went through, mm-hmm. you know, like people are just accustomed to it. So I think it's, I don't know. I'm just trying to give a couple of thoughts and ideas for somebody else who might want to do a lot more hunting. Cause that's the whole goal. That's why we did this. It's not necessarily, I can promise you, I have told people this. I want the least amount of people to know me that it takes for me to just make a living for my family. Right. Yeah. And so I'm not doing this at all for people to know who I am. In fact, there are more mean people out there than there are nice people, I feel like.
Yeah.
So this is me just trying to find a way to hunt like a lot, mm-hmm. because that is what I've always wanted to do. We've
talked about this. There's like kind of like two goals. So you want the card to work when you put it in the machine, and you want to hunt as much as you can.
Yeah.
You know,
like, and I ain't trying to buy nothing but lunch every once in a while.
Man.
You know
just
what
want
mean?
The card to work.
Yeah.
You know, like I've had the card not work a lot in my life, and it's
embarrassing.
Not fun.
I was behind a guy the other day who definitely spent more on his contacts that had weird designs in them than he was about to on his tank of gas mm-hmm. for $10, but he couldn't get his card to work. Mm. He like walked off embarrassed, and he was like, "I know there's $10 in there, and I don't guess there is because mm-hmm. your card's
sorry,
not
bro.
Working." You know?
It's not working.
But it's like I know that feeling, you know, because
well,
it's happened.
Back to I don't want to say back to reality, but there's a lot of, you know, blue-collar type folks out there mm-hmm. who those kind of situations might not be as
impactful. Sure. Yeah.
So, like, if you're you're a guy, maybe you're a gal, but there's probably a 99.9% chance if you're listening that you're a guy right now, just knowing our audience.
Some of our videos, there's actually 100% chance.
Yeah, 100%
chance. We can tell.
We got one.
We see. Got one.
Yeah, and that was just, you know, Mark watching on Sharon's account.
So,
but anyways, if you are a blue collar guy, you know, you work in skilled labor or whatever, I got into this real bad whenever I was doing that stuff, that I just thought I had to work like 8 to 4:30, 5 days a week, no matter what. And that's just the way you did it. And like, I put myself into this like office hours mentality when you don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was making $20 an hour doing remodel carpentry, you know, running my own business. And that's pretty good money then. Now it'd be pretty tough to do that. But like, you know, you could always work 12 hours one day and then take off a whole day. Mm-hmm. Or you'd work a couple 50-hour weeks, and then that's your whole week in November that you can go do.
Well, our friend Brian Bostick will, like, work extra shifts for guys at his company, and so that he has time off.
Mm-hmm.
They will cover his shifts. Mm-hmm. So that's something, like, another idea is, like, if you do shift work or something like that, working shifts during the spring and summer for dudes, and be like, hey, you remember that time I worked for you?
Yeah.
I'm going deer hunting this November.
Yeah, don't
the whole
invite
month,
all your
you
friends at work to become hunters, because then you're going to have problems.
Yep.
Yeah. But so, like, it's not just a thing for, you know, the late millennials or the Gen Zers, right? Like, anybody can figure out a way to work the system to be able to hunt more. Right. And really what we're talking about here, too, is not just time off, but finances, because you have to be able to afford this stuff. You have to be able to pay for it. And I don't know, man. I think growing up, I just thought that it cost more to do like an out-of-state hunt than what it does. It is really outside of the license cost. If you go somewhere that has some public ground, it doesn't cost that much to go out of state and go hunting.
Yep, $200 to $400, and then gas, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, camp, and you're good.
And I would think most places in the U.S. are within 5 to 6 hours of really good deer hunting,
mm-hmm.
probably. I mean, I know, like, we're a long ways here from good deer hunting, and, I mean, we're definitely – we can get to what you and I would consider good deer hunting in probably, like, 5 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, like, get off of work – and then be hunting the next morning, mm-hmm. kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or take a half day and be hunting that afternoon or whatever.
Absolutely. And, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of money to kind of get you a decent camp and set up. You know, make sure you, if, you know, you don't want to stay in the elements, you got to get you a motel room. You can find some pretty cheap ones, check for bed bugs, and it doesn't cost all that much. You know, it's like you literally can still find places for $40 to $45 a night.
Bed bugs and chicken poop. Those are the things that weird you out.
I guarantee you, man. And so, like, it's not as costly as you might think it is. You know, bring your groceries with you. Don't eat out. That's the thing that costs the most, is eating out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'll run you in the ground and make you not feel good.
Sandwiches, man.
Yeah.
If you can just get sandwich stuff, you can live, man.
Yeah.
I lived when I toured on I did a radio tour one time with homemade pickles mm-hmm. for my mom and peanut butter and jelly and a loaf of bread.
Mm.
I did like a week long, and I mean, who knows what my digestive system was, but I lived.
Yeah. You also in your 20s and probably like had just some energy that came from somewhere. But
well, there's a bunch of 50-year-olds listening to this thing.
Yeah,
so.
The point that you're getting at is there. Think about this year in South Dakota. It was unique. Y'all see it on the buck truck stuff. But we like made a friend up there who happens to be a pastor at a church. The next year he's like, hey, come stay at the church building.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, okay. It sounds great, you know. And it worked awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We hardly ate out at all. Didn't cost us anything to stay. And I know that's unique, but you could find you a cheap place to stay or you can camp. And I browned like 10 pounds of hamburger meat before the trip. And we ate burritos and tacos, like seven of us, mm-hmm. often, you know. Can I
say something about this browned meat that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Just because not everybody understands browning meat for burritos and tacos, but it's not just making it brown.
That's true.
You got to put some seasoning in this thing because it ain't going to taste that good.
Beyond
if you don't.
Salt and pepper.
Listen,
for sure.
Come on now.
It's like more cumin. It's like more cumin and chili powder and garlic powder than you could ever imagine could take.
That's right.
Like, you got to put a bunch on it, y'all.
Yeah. Onion powder, too. A little bit of a paprika in there. Yeah. Michael,
sure.
You have done a little bit of this from a different direction. Tell me about your Kentucky hunt.
Ooh.
You deer bombed a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Camped out of the Civic. It was a bad time. And I ate out. I was there for 3 days. I ate out 4 times, I think.
Mm-hmm.
and I felt like crap.
What'd you eat out? What'd you do?
Just like Wendy's, just nasty. Yeah. Just anything to MSG. Give me energy.
Dude, that's the bottom tier, dude. Jack in the Box, Wendy's. That's like,
man, we talked about this yesterday or 2 days ago.
I kind of like some Wendy's, man.
Dude,
Wendy's is so good.
No. Yeah, it is.
Spicy nuggets.
The fries are good.
Dude, nuggets are sponges, man.
I don't care. They taste good.
Chicken. Here's the deal, dude. When I was in college, I could go to Wendy's on the way to my apartment, and I could get a JBC, Junior Bacon Cheeseburger, mm-hmm. which has bacon and cheese on it, right? Mm-hmm. I get two of those, a value fry for 99 cents, and I had Powerades at the house, but I could get away with $3.27 because they're all 99 cents, you know, plus tax. I would take that and have a Powerade at the house, and I would be so satiated.
In my early 20s, I did ample amount of meals that were Wendy's because I think they had like 10 nuggets for a dollar for a while on the spicy nuggets or something.
That's how you know,
and
I would
get,
that sounds so good.
Yeah, that's how you know it's cheap food. And I'd spend like $2.14, you know, on a meal, and I did that, you know, over 10 times because that's poor. And
should be a meat eater.
Gosh, dude, no, it's all bread.
I told Michael the other day the only good thing at Wendy's is the Frosty. He didn't know what it was.
You don't know what a Frosty is?
It's not a big
dude. You
frosty
take
guy.
Take the fries and dip them in the chocolate Frosty. No. It is one of the best things.
I'm
ever.
Not on board with that either.
It is good, guys.
My wife likes it.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years, and not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal, and may lose value.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where Land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to Land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
So Wendy's, and you camped out of the car. How far from home was that?
It was about 4 hours, probably.
Okay, so you thought you were in good deer hunting when you got there, too?
I got to the closest place I could go for a September 1 opener.
Okay, so we've covered, like, the financial stuff to an extent, right? So everybody kind of understands how to live poor, or maybe you should if you haven't. Try it sometime. It's not
definitely
fun.
Should.
So should. Into the planning now of the actual hunt. You looked at it objectively. You're like, where's the closest place I can go when it's September 1?
Yep.
And try to shoot a deer. Looking back, was that the best plan?
No.
Should you
definitely gone to where I thought good deer hunting would have been?
How much more would you have how much more driving would you have had to do?
Probably about 3 hours.
And it would have been totally worth it.
Oh, yeah.
In Kentucky or a different state?
Yeah, it would have been in Kentucky, but it would have been more like ag. I was up in like the mountains, mm-hmm. you would call them. Mm-hmm. We would call them in Ohio.
Yeah.
That ain't fun.
And I was hunting out of a climber. Mm. So lugging that thing around after eating Wendy's, not fun.
How do you put the climber in a Civic? Is it through the back door or in the hatch?
In the back door, but you got to do some geometry to get it.
I got you.
Which I'm not good at.
Yeah. So how'd you plan for that trip then? Did you look at like OnX and say that's the closest public?
Yeah, I got on OnX and I looked for basically the biggest amount of public land that I could get to and just cover ground.
Man, so I'm not going to be critical of you because I absolutely understand that like it's the way to do it. And you also, what, were like 20?
I was, 20.
Yeah, so like, dude, that's a lot more like ambitious than what I was at 20, I think, when it comes to hunting. So
my drinking days were over at 20. Yeah, <so. laughs>
what else are you going to do, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so way to go on that. But I think that is a way that people approach like public land hunting so much. Yep. Is let me look for a big piece of ground I can go to.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to go too far into that. But when you start planning on where to go, just don't let your eyes go to the biggest piece and say that's the place.
Where I killed my deer in 21 in Ohio, it was a tiny piece of public that just had ag all around it. Mm-hmm. And had a lot of deer around it too.
I bet it did. And usually in those situations, the public is the cover.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, a good spot to have a high concentration.
Yes,
what other planning did you do on that? Like, did you just haul off and just decide to buy a license when you got there?
No, it was probably like a week before, and I was just like, I can't take it anymore. I need to go deer hunting. So I just dove in.
It was right before school started, I guess?
No, I missed a couple classes ago.
So syllabus day, you weren't even there?
Yeah, I wasn't there.
You're that guy.
Yep, for sure.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm. There's a reason I dropped out and now do this.
Yeah. That's not my favorite thing. I'm sorry, Michael.
It's all right. It's working out.
Good. I'm glad.
So far.
So far, great.
Let's wait till I sing to you some more. do you feel as if you were to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, your planning on that trip was a what?
Two.
A two.
Golly,
wow, that's low. What would you?
Thought you were smart.
So, you know, after being, not saying that we're experts at this, but we've done a lot. You've been around us doing it a lot. Yep. You kind of see our system and stuff.
Yep.
What would you have changed with like the way you approach that?
Definitely, first off, would have put a lot more thought into it, just baseline.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, like while I'm there, making more adjustments. Like if I got there and I didn't see that there was deer sign, which I did do, I would have just gone to a different part of the state.
So you're just waiting on one to walk by?
I mean, I walked a lot, and I eventually did have, like, a couple does come by and a tiny little buck, but...
Did you not bounce because you didn't know where else to go?
Pretty much, and I was also just terrified. I mean, I was 20, just out there in the boonies.
Yeah,
yeah.
Dude, I feel like that's a... So this is something maybe if I was to give a tip here, like if you can really like derive some woodsmanship in your own backyard or in your own hunting situation that's closer to home, it will help you so much when you go out of state, because there's guys that I've hunted with over the years or whatever that have that same kind of mentality that you had, where it's like, man, I'm just like scared out of my mind to do anything because I don't really know what I'm doing. You know what I mean? I've got a good idea here, and I did some map scouting, and this is like my spot. And so I went in here, and it ain't working, but it's the only spot I know that I can even make a logical, you know, argument for. So I'm going to sit here and sit it out. And then they end up just, you know, so like walking is a good thing to do, and trying to find like some sign or something that gives you a reason to hunt somewhere else. Mm-hmm. But when you can find spots on a map, like KC Smith can find spots on a map, like you start to give yourself so many more options when you go out of state. So I guess what I'm saying is hop on the maps this summer as it gets hotter here, which people are like hot. It's 80 here today or whatever.
I think 88.
Oh, really?
88 was the high today.
Oh, I thought it was like 80. Yeah, it's pretty warm. So as it gets hotter, hop on the maps and maybe in the cool of the morning and go see what your map scouting did the day before. and say, okay, did my map scouting work? You know, like what were my assumptions correct on this map, and were they not? What do things look like on this map as compared to what they look like here? Can I tell what the fauna or the flora is in this area based off of this map now? And can I relate that to other areas in the country or wherever? So you start to do that. Then when you got out of state, you can bounce when you don't find. I mean, we do that a lot. We spend a lot of time from the truck the first few days, a lot of times.
And I think that the bouncing was where I was trying to get with that, is that you need to have ample amount of bounce spots picked out. Like, that's a huge part of planning. Like, one of the reasons why I hold the top number of pins at Onyx, I'm kind of giving myself an award, but if you zoom out to the nationwide level, you cannot see dirt on the United States except for in like California and Oregon, because I have dropped so many pins. And anywhere we go in the country, within an hour, I have a place that's like, hey, we can go hunt there, you know, like that I've picked out. I mean, even states, like, look, dude, these pins are in Georgia, in Maryland, like ridiculous places, you know what I mean? Like,
I just think you.
Not that Georgia's ridiculous, guys. I'm sorry. But, like, ridiculous for me to be able to go there, right? But if for some reason I fell out of an airplane and it landed there and had to hunt deer, I'd have a good idea where to do it, you know? So, like, you need to have some stuff planned out. Like, if you're going to have a 5-day hunt, it's just like game planning for football, man. Like, we would go through, like, game scenarios, right? In high school, I remember doing this, where, like, depending on the score of the game or whatever, you do certain things or whatever, you know, offense were in, we would make adjustments. And Tyler can talk about football more than me. He played a lot more than I did. But, like, you get what I'm saying, you know, of, like, if you have a 5-day hunt, don't have a plan for 2 days and just be like, well, I don't know what to do the rest of it. You know, like, it would be good to have enough hunts in your mind that you could go through of like where you would go and what you would do. That way you could fill the whole 5 days. Because what did you end up doing?
Tucking my tail between my legs and going back home. But what I think is interesting about you guys in the way you frame it is it's not finding ground, it's eliminating ground. So you guys are like, you're not looking necessarily on the first couple of days for like the spot. You're just saying, this is not where deer are going to be. And then bounce.
It's just a crafty way of saying, like, oh, that was a bad hunt. But I think
there is something there for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I can remember in Oklahoma too this year, like, you know, the first day we were driving around and we were like, man, let's go check this. And I mean, what you end up doing a lot of times, especially in crop country, I think about this in like my 2020 Illinois buck, is like I went driving the first pretty much full day that I drove and I was just marking ag. And so by doing that, I'm more than anything, I'm eliminating things because I wanted to hunt certain types of ag. And so like when it was, I don't remember what it was. I think it was beans. I was looking for, or maybe it was corn. I can't remember one or the other. And say it was beans. And I was looking for beans for that reason or for that hunt for some reason. Every time I'd find corn, I would mark it because that would eliminate any spots surrounding that field that I might potentially hunt, at least right off the bat until I noticed something different going on. So, I mean, in ag country, you got these rotations between different fields year to year that can, you know, even if you hunted that area the year before, you might need to go back and see. Or if you have drought, like we had a lot of drought across the U.S. this summer, some ag fields are just not going to make because they sit high or whatever, and for whatever reason. And so you've got to figure out which ones those are, and the deer are not going to be going there if there's no crop there. So anyway, those are kind of some things, but it really is, because you can eliminate so much more ground than finding the spot, you know, every time you mark a pin down or whatever.
Man, so. I think it's pretty important to also judge the hunts that you have, like individual sits. Let's call them sits instead of hunts. Like, it's real easy to hunt a spot and be like, oh, I saw a dinker at 100 yards. There's still some deer in here. I'm going to sit here again tomorrow. Whereas, like, if you're on a 5-day hunt, like, you do that too many times, and all of a sudden you're on the back end of your hunt and you haven't seen Jack Diddley. Or you're like me in South Dakota 2 years ago when it's like, day 7, and I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to kill a deer. And thankfully, you and Hunter went in and found a spot where there was some deer, and then y'all shot stuff.
Who's
and
Hunter?
I got to go. It's a generic Dang. Term.
For oh, it's a generic term for a guy that hunts. kidding. Hunter is a good hunter.
Yeah.
Which is weird because his name's Hunter.
Yeah. Yeah, for
Rex
sure.
Rex knew something.
He did,
he
man.
Might've.
He knew what he was going to be.
Don't tell him.
he also can scorpion like no other.
Yeah. So,
Eric's scorpion king.
That's an interesting thought on the planning thing. Eric, you are in the midst of planning a hunt
to
a place
say.
That we've never been. Yeah, so we're not going to give details as to where, but it's like literally country that would none of us have been to, except maybe like driving within an hour of there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that scary?
A little bit.
After yeah. I put it that way, right?
Yeah, yeah. A little scary.
So what's your plan? I mean, not your hunt plan, but like how are you going about figuring this stuff out?
Just go there and figure out where they're at pretty much. It's kind of similar to what you guys do for deer. It's just eliminating spots, just trying to figure out where they're at and go from there.
So you're, are you mapping much right now?
A little bit. It's a pretty big place, so that's kind of a little scary too. So
yeah,
figuring out where to start is a little tough.
Do you, what's the hardest part to plan? Is it the killing of the animals, or is it the logistics of getting there, season dates, and
probably
like staying somewhere, food, all that stuff?
Probably that side of it.
Yeah.
And then just picking a spot where to start.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. Might be. Might be.
That sounds
like
Brian in Nebraska.
That's 250 at least, right?
Yeah.
Should be a good hunt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Eh?
For sure.
Yeah. Are you concerned about travel? Like, here's the thing that I think about a lot is getting there is pretty standard. You hop on a highway and go somewhere. But knowing what roads are actually open and, like, what is actually traversable terrain and all that kind of stuff, you know, like, maps can help with that stuff a lot. But things change from, you know, month to month on that kind of thing, too. Is that a thing you think about much, or is that just like an approach that you're just like, I'm just going to see what's there when I show up?
I don't really worry about that. What I worry about more is like finding a spot that I might like, and then you get there, and there's like four other trucks already
there. You're sort of people.
Yeah.
You're at pressure. Yeah, which is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there a way to plan for pressure?
No.
There's some hints, I think, for sure, that you could take. Not always major metro areas, but major metro areas that, honestly, that are maybe conservative or in conservative states where there might be a high population of hunters, you know, like where like hunting has a tradition in that state.
Mm-hmm.
Like Michigan has some of those, Pennsylvania, Texas, you know, you wouldn't want to be too close to a major metro area in those places, but, you know. And I guess depending on how big the metro area is, too, even in the other states, it's just a numbers game still. And then there's ways to think about pressure in terms of where is the actual spot you want to hunt on a property, and is it accessible from the parking lot, or do you have to have a second means of transportation to get to it, like a boat or something like that? So you can say, well, sure, there might be four dudes hunting that property, but really the other side of the river is where I need to be. And then there's, you know, if there is boat access, if it's a place that's like, say it was on the Mississippi or something, like, you know, is there a boat ramp close to that place? So that's a way to think about pressure, potential pressure, right?
Yeah.
And then aerial maps will show you what a trailhead looks like a lot of times. You can see trucks at trailheads, like in the elk country and stuff.
If you go find a cul-de-sac, like that's going to be a place that people congregate and enter the woods from.
Yeah.
I love, this is like a thing that, you know, hunting Colorado OTC, right, which is a thing that's becoming drastically less common. But people would like haul off into the Forest Service roads as far as they can get their four-wheel drive and set up a camp. But everything there is elk habitat. So, like, if you just pull up to the sign the National Forest, park the truck there and take a left or a right instead of going straight down the road, like all of a sudden you're in a place where there's nobody. Mm-hmm. And it's really weird.
Yeah.
It's like a strange concept that people, and I guess it's state to state because some states don't allow you to park on the side of the road. You have to go to a parking area. Well, depending on what type of ground it is, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's the same concept as what Michael was talking about, where he found the biggest piece of property, mm-hmm. a public ground that he can find. So, you know, this is an example here. We did a video from Shawnee National Forest in Illinois, and it made a few people mad because they think that it's a secret, right? Yeah. But it's literally 300,000 acres. People can see it from space, okay? You can zoom out to space on Onyx, and you can see Shawnee National Forest. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's a huge place. It's so
basically the whole southern half of Illinois.
Yeah, it's huge, right? And so people, it's not like a secret. Shawnee's not a secret, okay? And so that being said, people will be at places like that. Mm-hmm. Not because the Element put a video up and about showing their, 6 hours of scouting there, but because it's a giant place where people have options to go deep or, how, like you said, a whole half of a state has access to some piece there in the Shawnee, right? So, I just think if you're, it's not necessarily a reason to go look at small parcels, but expect that if you go to a place with a lot of access, then that's the case. Out west, they do most things in units, and that unit is going to have one or two major national forests probably to hunt. And so you can assume that if you go look at numbers of, tag holders the last couple of years, there's going to be about that many tag holders in that unit this year. And you can figure out how many acres that is per dude, and then you can figure out how far generally a dude wants to go. In the mountains, it's a little bit further. In the whitetail woods, like 3/4 of a mile is about as far as most dudes want to go. And there you'll see a few other hardcore dudes past that.
After this deer season, hunting a bunch of public ground, I've almost refined that just a little bit more. I think it is 6/10. Mm-hmm. I think 6/10 is it. Like dudes around the country, when they walk just a little bit over a half mile, they're like, I'm pretty far in here. Mm-hmm. Like 6/10 is like this, and not saying that pushing in 3/4 isn't even better, but like, it's funny how oftentimes that's the last hunter sign I see is 6/10 of a mile mm-hmm. from the parking spot.
Yeah. I mean, Greg killed 3/4 in, mm-hmm. in a spot that there wasn't really a whole lot of people. I mean, we had a couple of pictures of some dudes early, but
Greg isn't here right now. He had to go, have a meeting at his place of residence, but Greg's like main tactic is get as far from the entrance as you can get. I have a lot of other things I consider too, but Greg, like, he doesn't want to look for the overlook spot. He didn't want none of that business. He wants to, because he can walk. Mm-hmm. He is made for walking. And so, he is, man. So, he's like, I'm just going to walk as far as you possibly can in there, and I'm going to look for stuff. And he finds deer sign or deer usually mm-hmm. in most of those places.
Yep, he ain't afraid to walk. So, no. You're going to have your Gregs out there for sure. But, they're, mm-hmm. Once you get back in there, the acreage per man is a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so, there's a lot of different things to consider, man. And I'm not sure if you're wanting to wrap this or not, but here's kind of my wrap statement towards this whole thing.
Is that related to a rap video?
Yeah, it is. It's you make rap statements in a rap song, which goes into a rap video. Gotcha. It turns into a rap video. this stuff takes, I've said this before on this podcast, this stuff takes experience to really start to dial. There's almost no other way. Like, you can watch every daggum, Brady Miller putting his pack together video that's out there, or, Aaron Snyder, what he carries. Mm-hmm. And it does not matter, because you're going to be more specific to you than those guys are to you. Mm-hmm. And you may not want a half a toothbrush. You may want a whole toothbrush. You may be truck camping, so there's no reason to cut your toothbrush in half. Man. You know what I mean? So
bust out the old Coleman,
Yeah. And so there's different things. And the way that I started doing this whole thing, traveling to hunt, was I started traveling to fish first. Mm-hmm. And I would go to the Rockies, like, as soon as I got done with football. I tried to go to the Rockies every summer at least once, if not a couple of times, and take everything. I had no money, so I took as much, you know, spent money on gas, and then we would go, you know, camping or whatever. And so we got, you know, a tent and some food, whatever food we can heat up, and you start to figure out, like, you know, that you can heat up a can of green beans on a Coleman stove, and it makes a pretty decent side dish or whatever, right? It's not that hard, and it's decent food. And you can kind of, like, go through and find the stuff and fine-tune it. And then, you know, as far as, like, hunting out of state, the more you hunt out of state, the more you learn about different habitats, different ways that deer use different landscapes. And it helps you as you go even other places to be a better deer hunter. And so I guess my point is here, like, when you're 20 and you go do this, it is a good thing because you're going to learn some stuff. But you're probably not going to kill a deer. You know what I mean? It's plain and simple. Like,
you probably won't the first time.
For sure. It doesn't matter what age you are, really. If it's your first time, then you're probably not going to kill a deer, you know? And you might, and that'd be awesome. But
don't think you're awesome if you do. You just found one. You know?
Like, yeah. I mean, but as you do it a bunch, you start to really dial your system. You get the logistics of how all this plays together. You figure out, like, okay, well, I probably need to find a place to sleep tonight because that's, you know, A, number one, there's rain moving in or whatever. You start to learn how to get less comfortable, but you got to put in the uncomfortable, you know, days, months, time, years, whatever it is, trips is what it really boils down to understand how to do this better. And I would say, I guess, as a last little bit of encouragement here, if you can be somewhat tough, and you don't have to be Mr. Tough Guy all the time, but, like, if you can be somewhat tough on these trips, go do this stuff and just enjoy trying. And if you'll stick with it, you will do this well one day, and it will be, like, so rewarding and so much fun. And I mean, literally, I live for this stuff, dude. Like, I love traveling to a place, finding a buck, and shooting that buck and packing it out. That is it, dude. That is, like, what I want to do, man. Like, I got chills right now talking about it. That is, like, what I love doing. And as I can do it better, I really, you know, it's like playing football at a high level. Like, you eventually get to a point where you're like, some games you have are not that good, but they're not bad, right? You didn't just completely blank most of the time. And then some games you were on fire and you made the right moves and you did it right. And it's like, man, that is why I've, you know, suffered and tried to do this stuff, because there's a payoff at the end that's really cool, man. And so I just encourage people to do it and not expect to kill deer at first. And eventually you'll learn and you'll have fun. And it's kind of like, you know, it's almost like anything, man. You know, we talk about this because KC doesn't like grizzly bears too much. And some of our friends from grizzly bear country don't like rattlesnakes, most of them, or snakes, period, right? And it really
is. Spiders or any of the normal stuff.
I know, spider, whatever you eat, you know, normal things that you eat. But it's like, though, it's like whatever you get used to dealing with is what you are used to, and it doesn't, like, it's no big deal, right? So if you're used to living amongst grizzlies, like, it's nothing. KC can't hardly imagine hunting elk country right now in grizzly country for elk or whatever. And so, these guys can't imagine coming down here and hunting hogs if they're seeing any snakes, you know? So it really is the same way with this traveling to hunt stuff. If you travel to hunt and you get used to kind of being uncomfortable and then get used to, like, what it takes to travel, what makes you comfortable as you travel, what's good food to eat while you travel, all these different things, then it's a thing that you do. It's a part of who you are, and it's not that bad.
Yep, absolutely, man. I think that, too, if I can just piggyback off what you're saying there and kind of take it a different direction, all that just shows me the importance of starting right now if you haven't. You have got to get started. It doesn't matter if you're 65 or you're 15. Mm. Like, it's important to start right now because you're looking at a learning curve. No matter what you're doing, if it's something new, traveling a hunt or whatever, you're looking at a learning curve, so you need to start right now. And there's some tools that you can use to help kind of maybe shorten that curve a little bit, but experience is going to be the number one thing that helps you, right? Yep. I mean, you get yourself a good mapping system, get your reliable vehicle, figure out a way to sleep comfortably and get some good sleep on the road. Those things are going to help you a ton. You know, be pretty proficient with your weapon. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, like, you're just going to have to experience some stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, think about that and think about what it takes to budget to do that. If you do need a budget, if you're a person who's got a lot of money but just time is an issue, that actually might be harder than the opposite, right? Yeah. Like,
because you can, like I was saying, you can go trout fishing for like $30 or whatever, $50, and you can experience like the backcountry deal and the camping deal for cheap, you know? But if you don't have time, then you're in a hard spot.
Let's talk some practical budget stuff right quick before we get off. Most states are going to have a over-the-counter, or let's just say it this way. Most of your over-the-counter whitetail states are going to be somewhere in the range of $300 when it's all said and done. You know, it's going to be a little bit more, a little bit less, depending on what the state is. So you got to look at that. It's going to cost you. We just did the gas figure. Michael has a Honda Civic that's 40 miles to the gallon. That's pretty high on the miles per gallon. You know, a lot of guys are going to draft trucks. You're going to do good to get 20, probably more like 15, especially on your cruising around, looking around at stuff. So you need to take in consideration, say, what'd you say, 5 hours is about the radius for most people?
About 300 miles or so?
Yeah, 300 miles in 5 hours is probably a pretty decent figure. And you can do 5 hours with no bathroom stops if you're diligent with it, but you're probably going to stop once in there. But let's just say 300 miles, $3 a gallon, you get 15 miles a gallon.
20 gallons, so $60 at $3 a gallon.
$60 to get there, $60 to get home, $60 while you're there on the hunt. So that's $180. We're at $480 now. If you play your cards right, for 5 days, you should have no trouble eating on $80, I don't think. I think that between your drinks, your lunch meat, your bread, tortillas, a little salsa, a little vetch or something, some type of green in there, like $80 should get you. Michael says no.
No green.
Yeah, that's true. Green salsa. Okay. Oh, yeah, you'll do that.
Put that in your water too if you want.
We're looking at $560. Let's say you outside of that, you want to give yourself $40 worth of eat out while you're on it. You're looking at $600 total, and that's camping. If you don't want to camp, 5 times 40, you can find you a place to stay for. Yeah, let's just say 50. So 5 times 50 is $250. You're looking at $850, less than $1,000, and you're going on an adventure trip. That's $850 with a nice place to stay. If you want to camp,
then you got
to
add $700 for your mount when you shoot that right deer.
Get it back. So let's just say you're going to camp because you want to do this budget. You're looking at $600, but then it is the middle of March right now, and you want to go do this. In November. How many months is that? 7 months? You got about 7 months?
About $80 a month, something like that.
$80 a month. How much does a can of Cokes cost?
$80.
$8?
80.
80.
I feel like everything's $80 right
everything's
now.
Expensive. How much is it?
$2 for like a bottle of Coke. $2.50, something like that.
He said Coke, dude.
What about
Pop?
Just a bit.
Copenhagen? How much is that?
Well, when I stopped dipping, it was like $6 a can. It's probably more like $8 or something now. I don't know.
I feel like it's $9.
Somebody it might be. Brian. That's 10 cans of snuff between now and then you can cut. And no, that's not right. Is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is.
That'd be $90.
So,
10,
yeah.
10, say 10 cans would be about $80 or $90.
Yeah. So if you – most guys – I mean, I know a lot of guys that dip a can a day, but I think average is 2 to 4 a week. Let's say like 3 cans a week. That's
12 a month. So if you stop dipping, you can cover your costs.
Absolutely.
That's not fun for some guys.
No, that's asking a lot for some guys for sure. But you can buy a can of Celebration on the way. No, I'm not endorsing that. but you know, insert.
There's so many things.
Whatever thing here,
take your lunch to work instead of buying or.
That's right.
There's so many ways to save that, dude.
Don't,
even if you
don't
poor.
Go to the gas station. You know, I heard this the other day on a finance thing I was listening to. It's like this guy said, "Poor people buy stuff at gas stations."
Yeah,
you know. If you, whoa. Yeah, that's right. That's true. It's done. Poor people buy stuff at gas stations because they are. I don't want to say not smart enough, but like they don't plan ahead for snacks or for whatever it takes, and gas stations charge you out the wazoo because guess what they're called?
Convenience.
Convenience stores. You're paying for convenience. That pack of beef jerky that costs $7 or whatever, guess what? If you made jerky at home, it cost you about 58 cents.
Yeah.
You know, like it is not
expensive.
All you
got to do is shoot a deer to make some jerky.
That's right. Shoot a deer to make
it. Man, it helps you. It helps you to shoot deer. You know what I mean? Let's go.
Absolutely.
Saving money by shooting deer.
That's right. We're trying to have some meat.
Let's go, man. Y'all go tell y'all's wives this right now.
That's right.
Saving money by shooting deer.
$600 ain't nothing, guys, especially in today's economy. You know, I don't tell the game departments. I don't want this cat to get let out of the bag. But they have not increased their tag prices as much as inflation has increased. Like $200 and something for a deer tag ain't nothing
in
today's economy.
Man, can I even say this? I don't think I can say it.
I don't know if you can.
Never mind. All right, y'all. We're not who we are. We're different. Never mind. I'm not going to say that. But I just think that, you know, You definitely are getting some decent prices as compared to what we were getting maybe 5 years ago on stuff. Whenever things, I feel like Colorado started going up a few years back, and then everybody else kind of followed suit pretty
bad.
Is that what you do?
Yeah. So they got to pay for all that reintroduction that they did.
Dogs.
Oh. No. Oh, we're digressing bad. Pretty much what we're trying to say, guys, is plan this thing out because it is fun to make these plans. It's fun to dream about them deer you're going to hang on the wall.
Listen, when you go to eat lunch tomorrow, just put some plan-A's on that sandwich, man.
You don't even got to pay the taxidermist when you drop him off, man. So you can figure out budgeting for that later, but plan your hunts out right now. The tough stuff to do is the finance. The fun stuff to do is the actual, like, on-the-ground planning, the logistics, that sort of stuff. Get into that stuff. Dive into it. If you get tired of the finance stuff, you get bogged down in it, go do something fun. Map scout. Watch a YouTube video from that state. Maybe the element has a really big buck dying there. I don't know. We don't tell you what state we're in a lot of times because we don't want you to know. But anyways, man, have fun with it. This time of year, Tyler said it a while ago, it's the worst. We're as far from deer hunting as you can possibly get. Mm-hmm. We're planning turkey hunts right now, and that's like a month and a half out. It's rough, man. It's rough, all right? The bass might start biting soon, but half y'all don't care about them because they only get to 5 pounds in your state. So, like, we have to think about deer hunting. Have some fun with it. Dream with your buddies. Get your dudes around. Bust open some bubbly waters and talk about some deer hunting. Make some plans. Go hunt together, you know? It's going to be a good time. Remember, this is about fun, and remember, this is your element.
Live in it!
Live in it!
Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right, join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.